things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That looks so much that it's going to pass down to their world they talk about. And then some of the history we have is because it's fantastic enough that
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. Joe is here. Joe is going on a date night tonight.
Yes.
If anybody is watching this, it means you're not at the date night if you're watching it live. But for those of you that are at the date night, what's happening at the date night? Because I know you're going to do more of them.
So Deb and I, later on, like maybe 5 or 6 years into our marriage, we decided that we weren't dating often enough when you get in your regular life. So we started inventing once a week that we would go out and try to do something different, break away from that and pretend like we're, you know, just wooing one another again.
Yeah.
It was an amazing investment in our relationship.
Not just like going to Applebee's, but like doing something adventurous
exactly.
And fun, a little different.
Yeah. And so we ran out of things to do pretty quickly. There just wasn't a lot of stuff that catered to, you know, adults and married people to go out dating. So we invented the date night out.
Nice. And
we didn't really invent it, but we invented
it. But so this business venture for you, you have people that pay in and they pay a rate and they get what for their money?
So we usually go to a restaurant, like, you know, restaurants always have a couple days a week that are really tough to be open because there just isn't a lot of traffic, like Saturday, Sunday, Friday. They're all pretty good for the restaurant, but like a Tuesday sucks. So we go to these restaurants and we say, give us your worst freaking day. And we're going to try to make something out of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they pick Tuesday. They're not even open this day. It's not a competition with what they got going, but it gives their employees that are off today, give them something to do and another paycheck. And so they'll prepare the food. Some of them just open up the menu where you can order your own stuff. This one, they're setting it up almost like a banquet where they have a full menu of stuff and you go through the buffet line, you feed yourself. Their food is amazing.
I've been to a wedding there.
Oh, so good.
Well, it was previous name. It was
okay.
Beer and Keg before, and now it's Legends.
Legends.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so the food is so good, and the people are awesome. And I'm really going to hone in. Like, business before was like anybody who would work with me. Now I'd like to work with better people, like people who are on the same ideological and philosophy and whatever. And it's just great having great people around me now.
And then there's their entertainment as well.
Yeah, so this is cool. We when COVID hit, we took a lot of our friends that were really struggling in the entertainment field to make money. And we made a lot of friends by trying to help them get exposure and do their thing. And we met a lot of comedians and musicians. So we have a whole host of people who do theater, people who do comedy, and people who do music. And we're going to do all three of them throughout these date nights.
And now you have a 12-year-old.
12-year-old. He's awesome.
And he is doing a Mitch
Hedberg
impression. Yeah. And has he practiced with you?
You feel good?
You feel like he's...
We've rehearsed a bunch. Now, he's one of those kids that are like a 12-year-old, but an adult. That adult personality. And so, all I had to do was, you know, train him up, do a bunch of rehearsals, give him, the script and stuff like that. And he's nailing it, man. This is going to be so funny to watch a 12-year-old either arrive and do perfection
or crash and
or
burn.
Just crash and burn. But we're planned either way.
Yeah.
Half of our rehearsal was that if he gets stuck, then I just like do my thing and then we turn it into the show. So if he crash and burns, it's part of the show. And if he doesn't, it's part of the show.
All right. And then you have another comedian or magician.
Another comedian. This guy, he's a local guy and he's a really hard worker. I mean, he's one of the things where comedy scene anywhere he shows up and supports and back whoever's sitting on that stage. So I have a lot big appreciation for hustlers.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'll be fun. And are you full or are there still tickets available?
I think there's 10 tickets remaining.
So can people just show up and pay?
We got a couple that I'm going to have at the door, but you can purchase them right now, even though your right now is different than everybody else's right now.
That's true. That is very true. That's cool. I love that sort of stuff. And you're always figuring out a way, not just to do business, not just to make money for yourself, but you really want to make Youngstown better.
For sure.
And, you know, looking for local talent, local places, and how can we get local people together? And it's really, really cool. How's Deb's shop?
Good. Still loving it.
Saw a couple of people from church went there and posted the stuff they bought and how they, you know, like
It's cool because I don't see everything. So sometimes I'll just show up and I'll notice something on the table I had as a kid. And I get a
I would be like smuggling stuff out.
And so like when Ryan and I were going around there, I was like, Ryan, I had this as a kid. And I ask him trivia questions about what do you think this does? Because we had the farmhouse where you open the door, it goes, boom. You remember that thing?
Oh, yeah.
And so I said, I'll give you $20 right now if you could tell me if you open this door, what sound it makes. And he was trying to guess. So it was kind of cool.
That's fun. It's really, really neat. And she's open what days again in Struthers?
So she's doing Saturday's her main day, but she's also Tuesdays and Thursdays, the same night that we're here late. She goes there and does a late night. So,
yeah. Well, the topic I want to talk about, really, really exciting stuff, I believe, is optimism, realism, and pessimism. And I want to do it under this concept. So I heard Simon Sinek make a statement, and I believe it to be true. He said, your brain can't think in the negative. And the illustration he does is he says, don't think of a pink elephant. Everybody thinks of a pink elephant, right? And he talks about when you're skiing, you're told if you start out skiing one of these, you know, triple diamond death traps, you know, whatever, down the hill at 100 miles an hour. And you start out in your head saying, don't hit the trees, don't hit the trees, don't hit the trees.
You're going to hit the trees.
You're going to hit the trees.
Yes.
You need to be saying, find the path, find the path, find the path. And when you find that path, he's like, it's amazing. You'll go right down and be just fine. I think for a lot of people, they wrestle with this concept of optimism as living in like a fairy tale. Realism, well, you know, I deal with the facts on the ground, and you know, you can't just live in la la land. Like, there's facts, and I'm a realist. And then obviously you have some people who are pessimists. Some I've heard some things and read some studies that say that some people's hardwiring is bent one way or the other. Some people are hardwired to be a little more melancholy and a little more mellow, and some people are wired to be more cheerful and so they tend to be positive, or they tend to be seen as negative. But sometimes that's just a personality trait. Like, you know, we've all met that person that just, like, they just always look angry, and then you talk to me like, oh, you're not angry, but your face is, like, you know, we need to fix that.
Right.
And then we meet the people that smile all the time and happy on the outside, but are dying on the inside. Right. So there's certainly a tension to this. You and I both very much ascribe to, there's no other way to live than positive and optimistic. And it's not that you don't have bad days. It's not that facts don't get in the way sometimes, but it's more about an approach than it is anything else. It's a mindset. It's a mentality. It's the position. It's not that the person who says, I'm going to find the path, find the path, find the path, never hits a tree or a tree branch. Obviously people do, but by and large, you're more likely to hit a tree with the other mentality. So talk a little bit about optimism, realism, pessimism. How does Joe stay on the optimistic side of life?
So it's almost impossible when you take out the two personality types to describe to someone who's optimistic what it means to be a pessimism. Yeah. They think the other side is like delirious, like just doesn't see the world the same way.
It's like getting a Republican and a Democrat in the same room. Right,
exactly right. And, you know, I look at things like it's basically where your gaze is, where your focus is. I look at like pre-processing versus post-processing. Your negative people are post-processing. They're feeding you information after the fact that something has happened. And they are, once you do sophisticated things with it, like look at this experience and what had happened. So then you could take it sometime in the future and use it in the future. Right. Mm-hmm. But usually the information is given to you when you need the information yesterday. So it's not helpful after the fact.
They
can give you the narration of what you should have done, but it's usually not all that helpful.
And I think both are necessary. It's a timing issue. So sure. On the back end, that those post processors are super important to have after an event's gone through and you've done this, or a project you're trying to do, and you're on the back end going, hey, what do we need to tweak on the other side? Well, then post-process away.
Right.
Tell me that sucked. You need to fix that. People were late with this. That form was confusing. Like, let me know that stuff on the back end. I can't have those people in the planning meetings on the front end.
Right.
Because every good idea that gets lofted up, they're like,
right.
Like, it's their job to just pull.
And so they your kill optimists the momentum. Want to know what we need to do right now. Like, what's the next thing? Yeah. Like, I might not be able to do anything what happened 30 seconds and back, right. But what can I do for the next 30 seconds ahead? And that pessimism is going to say, okay, get in your time machine and go back to 20 minutes ago and do this. And that's where that, you know, this is big of the gap between the two conversations.
Well, and there's that super tension, but as an optimist, sometimes I get so far out in front where I'm, oh, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. I'm 5 years down the road in my head that I'm like, oh yeah, I have some responsibilities today. And I feel like the inverse is true when people tend to be on the pessimistic side. They tend to be that, you know, post person. They're always looking on the back end. They tend to live in the past and they want to get in their time machine and go back 20 minutes. And then they live there.
Right.
And they're like, well, you know, if they would have done this, you know, it would have been fixed. I don't know why we didn't.
And my recommendation on both of them is the exact same thing.
Okay.
Okay. So if you have someone who's living in the past, the goal is to look 1 inch ahead of them, what they're going to do in the super right now moment. And I take the people who are too far out and I tell them to gaze a little bit further right in the center. So pay attention to the first inch in front of you and then keep expanding your gaze as you trust what you're doing. Because a lot of times if you go off the reservation and looking too deep and you start sort of like neglecting the stuff that's right in front of you, you can't pay your bills for shit, but you can plan on an event you're going to have 6 years from now. Right. And that's
it's so true.
It's just as, you know, paralyzing in that same respect.
Well, it's like, you know, you meet the, you know, kid in college. It's like, I'm going to be the president of the United States. And I'm like, not if you don't pass this class. Like, you know, like there's that tension.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to be the best. Okay. That may be true, but today you have to take this exam.
Right.
And I think for a lot of folks on the optimistic side, being on that side, I know for myself, there are days where I'm like, I just have to handcuff myself to my desk because we have to get crap done today. Right. And yes, I would love to have another whiteboard session. I'd love to sit there and strategize this. I'd love to make phone calls about something happening 60 days from now. But if I don't take care of this, I'm not going to be able to raise money for that. I'm not going to be able to have currency to include volunteers in this because this ball has to happen today. And that's a, you know, that's a different mentality. And so you have to chain yourself to the moment. And the same thing for, you know, the pessimist. I agree. I think it's finding that, hey, this middle ground, focus on that 1 inch. I like that. Because they'll be talking about an event that happened 6 months ago and, you know, well, if we would have done this and, you know, you pissed this person off. And so now we can't use. And I'm like, okay, that was 6 months ago. I don't care anymore. Like, can you please come up and do this today?
Right.
And that's so, so true. Cause you can get caught in both spaces.
And, but the ebb and flow, nature is never going to present you an equal balance or whatever. It's going to fluctuate. And it's your job to like pull it back. So when you're in that moment where you're planning really deep about the long end stuff,
yeah,
like nature's not gonna be like, hey, Doug, pay attention to the short term things, yeah, right? They're just bombs that are waiting to go off. And so you want to sort of memorize like a logic that helps you do it. And it's really not, it's push and pull. If I've been on long stuff too much, I get something that occurred to me to say, hey, there's some short term stuff that I got to start paying attention to.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, the bill people start calling you know, whatever. Sure. Like you can't.
I'm more responsible,
pay them.
I swear.
Yeah. You can't not pay them. So how do you help fuse that tension with people on your teams? Obviously you have, you know, people in your companies that some of them are very negative and they're good post people. They're going to help poke holes in all the stuff that just happened. And then you have your optimists. How do you meld them? How do you make them work together?
I think that for the most part, you have a couple of different kinds. Like you have the people that are negative, that are only negative when they're in the leadership capacity. Otherwise, they're optimistic followers. And so I'll have them right next to me the whole time because they're looking.
So position can even affect how people see the world.
Right. Now, if a leader, if there's a subordinate that is negative, they're going to make the leaders who are optimistic feel really awkward when they're told every 10 seconds they're going to get sniped somehow or they're going to blow up in 10 seconds because they do not need that. They already have the confidence that, you know, they have the confidence to go in. But once you start, you know, shooting some barbs at them, they're going to, you know, kind of look at their own confidence and start questioning themselves and second guess it. So I got to keep those two separated completely.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. And I think getting them in the right position is important. So understanding that, hey, you're not like a nice person when you're in this role. We need to have you in this role. Sometimes, though, people who are in the negative are never going to get in a leadership role because of the way they're at.
Nobody is inspired by can't. Not at all.
Get that tattooed somewhere. No. Nobody is inspired by can't. My dad used to say, can't means won't, son.
Yep, there you go.
It's not a matter of ability. It's a matter of will.
Yeah,
and it's 100% true.
But these people, they think they're being observers. They're trying to share some information you obviously don't see.
Sure.
And they love you and they want to keep you safe. And you're obviously blind to all the bad things that can happen, right?
Yeah.
You got to have a certain respect for people caring, even if it's in a negative way.
Yeah, people all the time. they'll come to me and like, Pastor, I don't know if you know. 99% of the time I know, but I'm like, no, I don't. Tell me. And because number one, sometimes it's stuff that people have told me in confidence, so I'm going to play stupid and I don't know.
For sure.
And I don't want to fill in details if they're fishing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I'll let them, tell me about that. I'll just play right along and like, and they feel good like they informed me about something. And, most of the time I'm like, I was completely aware, but I just didn't need you to know that I was aware. And, but people want to be, some people just see themselves as the informant. They just want to inform everybody. And sometimes that's healthy in certain contexts, in the right position. It can be good, but in the wrong position, you turn it into gossip and you can hurt people and it can blow things up.
Yeah. And that might be their only way to be involved is to tell you how something's going to blow up because they don't have strategic advice. They don't have, you're not going to pal with them, but maybe you'll pay attention to them if they tell you your idea sucks and it has no chance of working.
I just ignore those people. Yeah, do what I want anyway.
That's all it gets you with me is I will never call you again.
Oh, that's so true. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to work with you. I'm sorry. You know,
there, my saying, and this is terrible because I'm a bad person, but there are 350 million people on this country, right? I am not going to give 2 seconds more notice on a person that wants to derail me.
100%. Yeah. And those people, they're always a test for me because I inherently value people and I want to give people 19 chances and it's just how I'm wired. And so, they'll come in and I'll be like, I can change them. I can turn them from the negative positive. If I spend enough time with them, Joe, if I just massage this and mentor this, and if I scratch where they're itching, I'll be able to, and that has not happened.
Can I guilt you real quick?
Go ahead.
You deprive someone who's open 100%. To it because you were worried about that person who wasn't ready for you yet.
That's not what you were going to call them, but you didn't want to put any money in the swear jar. Joe's getting wealthy this year.
Yes, the swear jar. Do you see what I did? I didn't say it.
No, it's true. It's one of the reasons why I think the education system is so jacked up, because we always give our time to the two problems in the room rather than the 24 or 25 students that are ready to go. And, the extra time goes to the kids on the side that aren't paying attention, aren't doing that. And I understand it's for a myriad of reasons that maybe they have a bad home life. I'm not degrading those two kids, but realistically, when you talk about in terms of financial investment or otherwise, you want to put your time, energy, money into what's ready to go. And so just like you're saying, hey, when we look at that, you're pouring all this time into people that are taking it from you rather than investing in people that are ready to go.
Let me be a little controversial.
Go ahead.
Because I don't really believe that, if we're talking about kids, so kids are a little bit different. They have a soft spot with me.
Yeah.
But I think human nature and the personality of human beings, that if you make something easy, so let's just say I have my office, my famous example is I have belligerent customer who really hates me. And I have customer over here who loves me and whatever. Right. I watch my staff go cater to the person who was mad. And I watch them ignore the person who was just happy and whatever.
Right.
Now you reverse that and you're like, you know what? I'm not going to make you happy anyway. I'm going to make you beg for my attention. And I go over here and reward the attention from the people who appreciate me. Guess what you get more of? You get more of that. Right. And then this person knows that the strategy doesn't work and they have to go be different in order to get the same level of attention. I mean, kids are the same way.
100%.
So anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, even having four, Abraham, sometimes when there's a younger kid that comes into the mix, he will start acting up. And I'm like, because he's used to being the baby and he just wants the attention back. And then if we give him the attention when he acts up, we're in trouble because we're going to create a habit. But you see that with parents, they wrestle with that. Or when you have your second kid, I watched a lot of parents, the first kid gets doted on and all that. And the second kid comes and they're like, I don't know what to do. This one, and the first one starts acting out and starts reverse. Like there are times where we had to correct Charlotte when we had Graham because she would start talking like a baby. I'm like, no, you know how to talk. But she was doing that because he gets all the attention. He's getting cuddled and he's getting coddled, and he cries and everybody stops. And then she'd be like, hey, I'm still here. You guys used to give me all your affection. Now I'm split 50-50.
Right.
And it's an interesting dynamic to watch. So you talk about rewarding behavior. Do you do the same thing then amongst employees? Do you reward the positive and just ignore the negative, or do you?
No, I give it very little energy. I give it very little time on the stage. And so like, if you've got a complaint, it gets about 9 seconds of valid, you know, response. And if there's any information, cool, we harvest it, but then we over magnify the stuff that's good behavior. And so it gets all the attention.
Yeah. I try and push our team into like, I'm cool. Like, fires have to be put out. I get that. The problems happen, complaints come. But my thing is, I'm much more receptive when there is a complaint or a problem and you're going, and here's three ways to solve it. How would you like me to solve it? Then I'm like, oh, bring it on, bring it. A, B, go execute. That to me is like the sign that somebody's growing, maturing, you know. Just about everybody. I can walk around the church and point out all the problems. I got a list in my phone.
But, you know, you and I are results-based. So we actually have something that we're trying to accomplish. 90% of the people that we're leading want relevancy. They want to count for something. And so it's a perpetual game that's being played where if they get a sales thing, that doesn't do anything for them. Mm-hmm. But if they can do something in front of you that has recognition attached to it or some positivity attached to it, that's the game they're playing. So you give them you've been part of a social media group. Yeah. Right. You put something out and ask a question and you get people to dive on you for whatever reason. It's because of that negative attention. When they're a total jerk, people yell at them and say, you're a jerk. And I don't care whether it's you're a jerk or you're awesome. People pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me the click. Give me the dopamine.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. That is that's interesting. I know for me, the rub that I have sometimes is you get into a funk. Or your house gets into a funk, or your wife gets into a funk, or whatever, and you're just like, snap out of it, you know, or your kid, you know, Charlotte sometimes will get into this space where I'm like, I don't know how to get through to her, like she's just shut down, or she's whatever, and I'll have bad days too. How does Joe snap out of a funk, or how do you help your house, or sometimes it's tough, like, you know, you can't be like, hey, hon, to think on the positive side of life, but shut up, I'll teach you the positive side.
So don't do words. Yeah. What I do is we're creatures of habit. So we have this thing where you do the same things throughout your day. You end up in the same spots that you do, and you don't even realize that you're programmed that way. So think of clear the desk off. When I feel like I'm jacked up and I need change, I have to do different stuff. So I clear the desk off and make it hard for me to do the same stuff. So I'll make suggestions to go do something else and to put your brain in a different frame of in a frame and setting. So if the whole family is, they like say, we just spent 9 days in a row in the house watching TV, going from couch to couch. Yeah, dude, let's do something. It doesn't even matter what it is, as long as it's a different thing than you did the last 9 days.
Change the scenery.
Change the scenery up. Yep.
Smart, smart. I think for me, I feel better when I'm positive than when I'm negative. Are you aware of any biological effects to your body when you're constantly thinking in the negative? Does it cause your cortisol levels to go up? Does it release certain hormones? And when you're positive, does it do anything different?
So I would put it like this, from an evolutionary standpoint. If your body thinks that you're in danger, there's predators, death, right around the corner, it will give you chemicals to be very alert, very smart, very strategical to stay alive, right? But if you stay in that deal for too long, it's not meant to be in danger for long. You have to come out of the danger, then it subsides and you start taking injury. So I really like going into dangers, getting all my feathers all up and strutting around, right? But I got to come out of it so that I can return to peaceful times. I don't suggest that you do one, or you have to do both, but don't stay there as longer than you have to.
It's the yin and yang of life. It's you have to have one side and the other. You can't live with the accelerator to the floor all the time.
And you can't be in apathy where you just like waste away either, because your brain's going to die or your brain's going to die. So it's got to have both.
Interesting. So Joe Danier is saying that you need to have both optimism and pessimism.
Yes. You need to program the pessimism so it's something, a lever of action, right? So if you throw something in you, it's not meant to be some pregnant dot, dot, dot that makes you feel bad, because then you're just going to stay there.
Yeah.
But it has to be, if you lob something in, you have to be like, now, what do I want to do about that right now? How can I make whatever I just said better right now? So you've got instant problem, but instant solution. You don't throw something out there and just let it linger out there.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. That totally makes sense. How have you instilled optimism in Ryan? What have you done anything intentionally?
just nagging. Like I really, the worst thing that you could do is use words, and that's okay. All I've been able to do. I'm like, that word you used, I don't even know what that means. Can't, huh? Speaking a different language. That's the only thing. But he realizes there's some words that I don't quite understand and he can't use in my house. And he's like, picks different words.
Yeah.
Stupid, a little bit effective. I got to have a better plan though.
it would be interesting to, I mean, maybe we should do this at some point. Have Ryan and Charlotte or Graham or whoever on and just talk through a topic like this to see what they actually think.
Make them do most of the talking and we just lob the questions. That would be sweet.
We'd have to pre-record it because there may be some quiet parts where we'll have to say, all right, we're going to, I don't know if we can chop and edit or whatever. Just to help them through because, having a microphone can be intimidating.
And I want to hear his opinion. Yeah. I don't want to really be here because I want him to say crap that he would say only when I'm not around.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be neat.
Yeah, because you do your best as a parent to give them a positive outlook on life, but it's so interesting. As Charlotte's starting to creep now, she'll be 11 next fall. She's 10. She's starting to become even more her own person. Like, she had opinions and thoughts as a kid, but now there's like things where I'll say it and she'll be like, that's wrong. And I'm like, excuse me.
Well, here's something neat. This was probably the biggest victory. We were really, really hardcore in the beginning about nutrition and sleep and what he watched and what he did, right? Controlling the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we started getting with family members that would not follow those guidelines. It would irritate me
because you're one of those precise parents.
And everybody wasn't precise. Yeah. And I thought, either I'm going to have to change everybody, right? Or I just keep modeling, right? I just do my thing. And when he's away, he can create some contrast in his own and come to his own conclusions.
Yeah.
And so I stuck to that. I didn't mock what he got over here.
Okay.
I just continued to explain and model what I had here. And a lot of those changes, it took years for him to remove some of the stuff he learned elsewhere to come back to the why we do it over here. Because here was stupidity, right? I still judge on like over here. It was
this just, is poison, Ryan, poison.
Sugar?
I can hear you. Oh, that's great. Well, I think, when you look at that and you talk about training, it reminds me of a Bible verse, Joe.
Yes, it does.
In the book of Proverbs, it says, train up your child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. And a lot of people look at that verse in an interesting way. They think like, well, if I teach them all the right things and I control everything and all of that, that when they're old, they're going to continue doing that sort of stuff. And realistically, what you just talked about is, hey, I'm going to show him, I'm going to demonstrate, because more's caught than taught in the home. Like, I can say stuff to Charlotte, but she watches me pray. Like, I can say like, hey, this is really important, but she watches what time I get up. She watches how I interact. I can say, hey, you know what? It's really important to forgive. But if I don't ever model that with my kids and say, hey, you know what? Daddy was having a bad day. I know I was grumpy when I came in. I'm really sorry for talking to you guys that way. And they're all, I've done that probably hundreds of times. Like, and you look at that and you go, hey, I'm tweaking, I'm getting better. And you watch them respond to that and go, all right, we're supposed to be in this relationship where, yeah, dad had a bad day. All right. And he apologized, and it makes them apologizing easier. And you watch them do it quick. And I'm like, oh, why? Cause you're modeling it. If you start demanding it, yeah, sure. Fine. I'm sorry. Like, and you get the half-hearted kind of attempt at those things. But I think the same thing would probably be true with that outlook, the positivity, all of that is you demonstrate and you give parameters and you show them how to do things and you do experiments. Hey, we're going to try this and see how they respond. But yeah, when they get older, what you find for a lot of kids is they didn't get what dad taught them. They got what dad modeled for them.
Correct.
They didn't get what mom told them. You can't do that anymore. They got, well, yeah, but you shouldn't do this. And then they watch mom do all these unhealthy things. And then we shouldn't be surprised that all these unhealthy things follow. And it's true almost across the board. It's why, a child of an alcoholic tends to have a bent towards that. It's why a child who's raised in an abusive home tends to be an abuser themselves. And you can follow that model. It's not true for everybody, but in general, what's modeled in that space, what's been trained in the child when they're old, that's what they do.
Yeah. And what, bringing up Simon Sinek, one of the first deals that I learned from him was like a positional authority versus a persuasive authority.
Oh, yeah.
And so like as a parent, that's like embodied with that. You know, you can tell your kid not to do it, but if they see you doing it every chance you get, your words meant nothing. Yeah. And you will not have a
same
long-term
thing.
Deal.
True in the office.
For sure.
Yeah, Maxwell, John Maxwell teaches the five tiers of leadership, and it's positional, relational. I'm going to mess this up now that I started going up the tiers.
It's all good.
Productivity, and at each tier, you gain a certain level of influence. But those first three are where most of the people live. And so you get hired as the new boss of Sheets. You have a positional authority. You can fire somebody. You can hire somebody. You can set the atmosphere. You can decide what the thermostat's going to be. You can decide how much should be in a till. Like you have a certain level of authority, but you don't know anybody. And then as you get to know your employees and you get to hang out, I was like, oh, you know, I kind of like Joe. He's a good boss. He lets me do this. And, you know, he's real understanding with my schedule. You know, he likes Marvel and I like Marvel. Like, and you start building that relational side out. But then realistically, when you really start churning is when they go, oh, Joe gets his stuff done. Like he's fun to work for because we're taking that hill together, and that productivity really pushes you, you know, into that space. But yeah, it's very similar. Like you can, a lot of people lead from the positional. Well, I'm the boss. No, you're not. I know you have the title, but you ain't the boss. Yeah, I say to people all the time, if you have to go around, you know, a lion never has to tell anybody it's a lion. If you have to go around telling everybody you're the leader, I promise you, you're not.
Right.
So it's all about persuasion, influence, et cetera. And
let's talk about, go back to our pessimists before. What I notice about pessimists is that they're very single dimensional. They're very memorizing. So if we're talking about like, hey, your kids are really well behaved. I want my kids to be really behaved. What do I do? And I would say, go back 12 years and do everything different. A time machine comes back into play again. Now, what do I do today? Like, what can you start doing today? Well, it would be tough because you're at this, by the time you're asking me as a pessimist what to do, you're kind of already in a losing proposition. Yep. You're going to argue with me that it can't be done. And I'm going to almost want to agree with you that you should have done it way sooner than right now.
Well, it's like, you know, when you think about child development, what you're talking about there is there certain nutrients that you need at certain levels as an infant so that your bones are strong. And if you don't get that before you're two, I can't give you more calcium at 20 and be like, oh, the bones are now strong.
Right.
No, you needed it too. It was important for that development and that foundational block. And in the same way with kids, you know, you can put it in, but if you're 14, 15, I love parents, but when I was a youth pastor, they would come to me and be like, pastor, fix my kid. I'm like, oh, it's too late.
Right.
Like, I don't like it, you've had 14 years of training with them. They are what you have taught them to be.
Right.
I get them for an hour a week if they're here every week. And you want me to do what?
So you get to 65. You have a buddy that saved for nothing for retirement. Mm-hmm. You're about to retire and you pensioned and you invested and whatever. That dude walks up to you and says, hey, I see what you got going. You don't have to work anymore. Right?
Can you show me
how to do that? Can you show me how to do that? Right? Like what? There's no magic pill.
Right.
This is a question or a conversation we need to have 20 years ago. Now, what would I tell him? I would say, well, you know, plan on living longer because you're going to need to work longer.
Better get your brain cryogenically frozen or hit the lottery. One or the other. Yeah. And it's true. All of these things are, and we've said it in so many shows, whether we're talking about leadership, faith, it's not the Hail Mary pass. It's the 1 yard run that makes the difference. And in your life, you're stringing together these series of moments, these 1 yard runs. And so, you know, you watch somebody and go, oh, they, you know, we get people all the time. Our kids are awesome. They're very good kids. And I know they get talked about from the platform on the podcast everywhere, but they're really, really good kids. And my wife has been a rock star and she has been home with Charlotte, Graham, Benjamin, and Abraham since the word go for 10 years. She's, you know, raised the kids. And yeah, I've worked and I've been there as a dad and been in that, but she's doing 75, 80% of that work. Right. And it's awesome the way that she's done, the schedule she's kept. But we get people all the time that'll see, you know, our kids and they're starting out having family. They said, you know, what'd you guys do? And then we tell them and nobody wants to do it.
No.
And I'm like, listen, I don't care what you do. Just be consistent. I was like, the consistency and having some form, kids respond really well to schedules and boundaries and all of that. And most parents don't do that. You know, they just, well, I just want to get through this and I just want to get through that. And that's fine. You just get through life and then they don't have any.
Yeah. If you forego all of those steps, you can't have the end product that the rest of us invest in.
But it's true when you go to the gym, consistency. If you show up and walk a mile every day consistently for 365 days, you're going to do better than the person that shows up, tries to do a 4-hour workout twice a year and, you know, makes a donation the rest of the time. It's just true. The same thing's true. I'm down 20 pounds, Joe, which nice. I'm really excited about.
Well done.
I'm going, I have a physical next Friday. And so I want to stay in the spot and I want to see where everything's at. I'm feeling good about it, but it's just been consistency. It's bottom line. Like it hasn't been, you know, I didn't just eat lettuce. like it's just been, hey, I'm going to work this plan and I'm just going to be consistent. I'm going to do the same thing every day. Oh, you know what? I messed up there. That's fine. I'm just going to get back on the train and I'm going to be consistent. And I've tried to just put my head down. I haven't said too much to too many people and I'm just trying to create a consistent new habit. And I would say 90%, I've been pretty good. And the more consistent I am, the more the scale moves, the less consistent I am, the less it moves. I mean, it's
so I have a detractor, beautiful. Someone who lives to defy whatever I say on social media. And this was the conversation. And this is a good example of the optimist versus this guy who's the pessimist.
Okay.
I said that the scale is a reflection of all those choices. You're not losing weight. Your body is just coming into where whatever the profile that you created.
It's just a mirror.
Right. Yep. So if you've got a consistency, eventually it has no choice but to reflect what that consistency is.
Absolutely.
Not perfection, right? You don't have to do these ingredients list will give you this output.
No.
You're looking the other way around saying, okay, the output is whatever this adds up to. You don't know what that's going to be until you do it long enough and look and say, oh, that was the output.
Exactly. And that's true in anything, whether you're raising your kids across the board. It's 1 inch at a time, 1 moment at a time, 1 yard at a time. That's the way you move stuff in life. And for the pessimist that is going to look at that and be like, yeah, but that's a lot of yards. Well, yeah, it's a lot of yards for the optimist too, but we're just going to show up and we're going to be down the field and you're going to be standing here complaining that you got to go more yards. It really, that mentality to step out and to believe it's possible, the faith that comes with optimism really is just sets people apart. It really does.
And if you said, take like a $10 bill out of every paycheck and put it in this box, right?
Consistency.
And that person, that pessimist is not going to do that. They're not going to believe that $10 is enough to change it. And they're going to somehow go without something. They're going to have themselves talked into that. Since the benefit is not big enough to justify the effort, there's no way that they're going to do that.
Well, there's always that, Dave Ramsey does this and others, they talk about, you know, if you put away, I don't know what the number is, but it's like something small, like $70 a week from the time you turn 18 to the time you're 28, you'll be, you know, a multimillionaire when you retire. If you put it in a Roth IRA or whatever, that's kind of Dave Ramsey's thing. But people are like, well, $70 a paycheck, and I can't afford $70 a paycheck. And what am I going to do? You know, am I not going to eat? Am I just going to eat ramen noodles? And you come up with all the reasons not to do it. And in reality, it's $70. Well, all right, you can't do 70, do 35. And maybe you're not a multimillionaire, but maybe you're a millionaire. Like you start looking at things like that and just the little things that you do consistent over time. My wife and I take $100 off the top. Every paycheck goes right into savings. We never see it. It just immediately, it's automatically deducted. It's something we've done for years. And yeah, it's $100 and all right, it's $5,200 a year. Not that much, but then over time we're like, oh, look at that. You know, and it starts to accumulate. And then it's like, all right, well, we need to do this for the house, or we need to do this, or we need to set this aside. And we use a chunk of that to pay taxes and do big things. But realistically, you know, you're doing that off the top and you're not thinking about it and you've automated it. It's part of your subconscious now in terms of what you're doing. And that's what I think I kind of want to land the plane on is ultimately I want to subconsciously always be positive. Like I want my knee jerk when somebody gives me something is, oh yeah, that's possible. Let's do it. Not, I don't want to be measured that way. I want to have a measuring stick with no end. I want to be able to look at it and go, regardless of what the scenario is, situation, like, yeah, that we can do that.
So let's create a couple more metaphors so to help you know, to help underscore that. You have to believe that there isn't limitation, because a lot of pessimists think that if they don't eat it, someone's going to come along. Mm-hmm. So we craft these consumers where you create a resource and you eat a resource. Saving means that somebody's just going to steal it in the future, or you're going to lose it, or fire's going to happen, you're not going to have it. So if I don't eat right now, it's going away. Mm-hmm. So I had this like thought experiment. I really wanted to do it with Ryan, but I didn't. And I guess it's not too late, but I figure if you if you had a baby, and you know, you put some money away for birthdays and Christmases, and you give them a little bit, and you taught them, like, this was a rule of the world that you are allowed to spend money that's of interest. You're not allowed to ever spend the principal. So if you go to a job, you're just putting it in the bank, and whenever the interest spills over on the end of the, at the end of the month or the quarter of the year, that's your consumption stuff. Mm. Right. It would be really cool to see when you the tipping point happens where, you know, $4 or $5 when you're 10, you know, 10 years old isn't enough. But what if you got into your 30s and then you were just spending off of the interest and you were able to accumulate a nest egg early on in life instead of waiting way end of life?
So Graham just had his birthday.
Yes.
And he got about $100 in Target gift cards and cash and assortment of things. And he was super pumped. And I said, great. And Grandma, my mom, was like, hey, I'm going to buy him new sneakers. Great. Called her, got her budget. And we went to, he and I were looking at sneakers on my phone. And the sneakers he was looking at, I'm like, those ain't in grandma's budget. And I was like, grandma's budget wasn't bad, don't get me wrong. But some of the sneakers he was looking at, I'm like, I don't think I'd spend that much money on sneakers for myself. Like, and I've spent some money on sneakers. And so, you know, I said to him, I said, here's the deal. You have about, I think he had like 30 some dollars in cash, and he had already set some aside to give, because we teach him to do that. And I said, now you can save some of this money if you want, or you can spend it at Target with your gift cards. Or if you want a shoe that's going to be more money than what grandmom's willing to give you for shoes, and you want a shoe that's more, you're going to have to contribute some of your own money. And I watched him in the shoe store, you know, he's doing the math in his head, and I watch him looking, and the shoes he really wanted, I thank God they didn't come in his size. So it saved him a little bit, because he was going to try them on, and but it would have, he would need another $30 to pull it off. And it would have been the most expensive pair of shoes he ever had. It would have been over $100 for a pair of shoes. And he was very excited. But they didn't have his size. And he goes, you know what? That's okay. He's like, you know, now I have this money for other stuff. And we were trying to, and then walking around Target. So he ended up picking a pair of shoes in grandma's budget, which he was very excited about. But then walking around Target, I kept going, we don't have to spend all this today. Like, we can, if there's something you really want, we can go find that and we can get it and we can come back. And he went on a spending spree and we're sitting there like, I want to help him, but you know what? He's got to learn. And so we had to hang back and had to let him do his thing. And he did the math good and, you know, didn't overspend. He spent his entire everything, and he got some cool stuff. He got some stuff that he bought, a couple shirts that he wanted and needed. So it wasn't like all bad purchase. It wasn't like he bought like, you know, $100 in bubble gum or something like that. But you know, he was pretty excited to do that. And it was birthday stuff. But, you know, we've been thinking about that for Charlotte. Like, you know, do we get her a bank account? Do we start, you know, teaching her some of these principles? Not just from a financial standpoint, because it's really a life standpoint. Like, if you spend everything you have, if I spend all my energy, if I spend all my emotion, and I'm not putting some in the reserves, I'm not creating margin, I'm overextending myself, I'm going to be in debt. My body's going to let me know you didn't get enough sleep. You're in debt. My body's
is a symptom of consumption. Exactly. You just have debt. You have fat store debt. You have financial debt. You have relationship baggage. All of that is stuff that can be shed, right? Yeah. If you stop accumulating it. But most of the time, even
You have to work from a deficit.
It's exactly
the reason I'm losing weight is I'm working at a calorie deficit.
But if I start with a one-year-old has no deficit.
Yep, yep.
They can live off of the interest because we haven't dealt them an adversity to overcome that yet. But it would be a hard sell because why am I doing this? There's no adversity.
Yeah, yeah. Adversity is a great teacher.
It is too.
It is. Well, we hope that you enjoyed this show and optimistically are ready for whatever comes your way. Think positively. It's going to be good. And hopefully we'll be here Thursday. Joe's got some TEDx stuff that he's preparing for here in Youngstown. TEDx Youngstown coming this weekend. It's going to be fun. And so if we're not here Thursday, we'll see you back here next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos